We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All NBA Show, part of the All City Podcast Network, coming to you live Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday every single week. I'm your host, Amadis, and I am joined by my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler. Legs is back. It's good to have you back, Legs.
Good to be back. Had a nice little getaway to Phoenix to call a Celtics-Suns game, so I was excited about that, getting to the arena. I spent some time with Emma, so that was fun. We missed you, Adam. You know, you weren't there for our meetup, but that's okay. We'll make it happen another time.
I know people will be surprised to know this. Me and Legs have never met each other. So
never
a show every day, and it's only like this.
It's people, that's probably just makes no sense to anybody. That's kind of the nature of our industry, man. But it'll happen. It'll happen sooner rather than later. If nowhere else, it'll be Vegas this summer, I guess.
There you go. Not a bad place to hang out. No. On today's show, we're going to talk about that Suns-Celtics game because we're going to catch up on some of the games from the weekend, and that one was a big one. We also want to talk about the Boston Celtics, who I thought had their most interesting week, big-time wins, big-time losses. So I think it gives us a chance to say, okay, what did we learn about the Celtics through all of that adversity? We're also going to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have fallen to third in the standings in just 1 week, shorthanded, of course, the Lakers getting a win, who they are on a roll. And then later on in the show, we're going to talk about some of the trends in the NBA post-All-Star break. The post-All-Star numbers, now that we're 10 games into it, there's some really interesting trends there with teams that are stepping up, teams that are falling, and then just defenses making an impact. So we'll get to all of that and more on today's show. But first, All-NBA sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all they have to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, Legs, let's go back down to Phoenix where you watched the Celtics beat the Suns over the weekend. No Porzingis, no Devin Booker. And the Celtics were something of a desperate team riding a two-game losing streak coming into that one. And they played a little bit like it. They picked up the win in that one. You were there to see it in person. What stood out?
A few things. I think the first thing that stood out was, you know, without Porzingis, you know that the Celtics, they've got some other serviceable bigs. And so you're wondering, like, how are they going to stack up, particularly with Nurkic, who has come into that game, was right, averaging 17 rebounds a game over his last six, including that 31-rebound game. So he's been just cleaning up the glass. And now, you know, you don't have Porzingis. So how are they going to hold up on the front line? And what they got was a combined 23 points, 18 rebounds out of the center spot between Luke Kornet and Al Horford. Those guys played fantastic, particularly Kornet. And he really was just benefiting on the Suns' inability to contain the ball on ball screens, like where the screen was taking place. And Nurkic was in a tough spot all night because he wasn't like hard hedging. He was kind of back in that in-between land. He was trying to stop the penetrator, and then they were just lobbing it over his head. I think Kornet had four dunks in the game, really all off of the same action. So I just thought first thing that stood out was just the way the Celtics stepped up, because Al Horford is basically a reserve. So he won't count as bench points in this game, but he's really a bench player. And the way they both played, Peyton Pritchard played great. I just thought their bench was a huge difference in the game. And their front line, you know, stepping up in a big way against a guy that has just been absolutely putting up monster rebounding numbers.
So I think that is the key for trying to beat Boston is you have to have guys that can guard one-on-one because they stretch you out so much, being able to close out and then contain. And I would guess that Phoenix has some guys that are pretty good at this, Royce O'Neal and Grayson Allen in particular. So what was it? Was it the star players? Who was it that you thought was really sort of the weak links defensively with that specific thing?
Yeah, it was really, you know, they were attacking Bradley Beal. They were getting into him. Royce O'Neal was more about getting screened off, and he was having a hard time keeping the ball in front. They were going at Grayson Allen, you know, who really competes, and he's strong. But they were allowing – it was interesting because they were allowing a lot of contact on the perimeter. So they were trying to body these guys up, but they were just holding their dribble good enough. And the fact that the Suns were kind of stretched out, like you said, they were like edge of the lane. They weren't a foot or two in the lane. They were making sure they could get out to the 3-point shooters. In Boston, you know, 15 for 39 is not a terrible night, 38%. It's not as many as they normally shoot. They average like 42, 43 a night. They make 16. It was basically an average night from the 3-point line, despite the fact that the Suns were trying to take that away. It was really across the board. It wasn't any one particular guy you could point at. It was really mostly off ball screen action. They were able to get down in there, and Nurkic just found himself in a tough spot, having to make choices. And I felt like most of the choices he made, the Celtics countered, and they found a way to get it over the top of him and get some easy stuff on the back. So that's the first thing I think that stood out to me was that, Adam. And then another big factor in this game was the lack of pressure release that the role-playing three-point shooters gave for the Suns. I mean, look at the night. They were 9 for 31 as a team, but 7 of those were Durant and Beal, right? And those aren't the guys that, you know, and they're getting their own off the dribble, basically. So those ones that are like those wing kickouts, the corner threes, collectively, Royce O'Neal was 1 for 9 from the three. Grayson Allen, 0 for 4. He had an 0 for. And this is the guy he was 11 for 13 in the last two games in the first quarter alone from the 3-point line. Had 7 makes in one game in the first quarter. So, and I talked to Jaylen Brown about this after the game and Drew Holiday. They targeted him. There was no question. The beginning of the game, particularly, they were not going to leave him and allow him to get off to one of those starts because he gets a couple going and he's totally, totally different mindset for him. So he goes 0 for 4. Eric Gordon 0 for 2. So like those are three main guys that you're asking to spot up and knock down shots, right? And collectively they were 1 for 12. And that was a big difference in the game for me because those shots and Saben Lee had two wide open threes in the corner. He missed both. So it's really 1 for 14 amongst those guys. And these were shots that were absolutely naked, Adam, because Boston was so intent on trying to make sure that they didn't allow Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal get into spaces and play one-on-one and get into the paint and get to the rim. And that to me was a massive factor in the game. Like you got to be able to knock down a share of those to be able to give those guys more driving lanes. And they just couldn't do it. It was just one of those, like Grayson Allen just had no room the entire game. The other guys had space and they just couldn't make shots.
So you bring up something that I think is the most interesting thing with Phoenix. And look, they didn't have Devin Booker. They haven't had him for a handful of games, and they haven't been complete for very many games this year. So how much this matters once everybody's healthy is TBD. But Grayson Allen, to me, seems to be the biggest X factor on that team every single night. And I kind of think even when Booker's back, he's still going to be the X factor. You mentioned 0 of 4. One, the volume is low, like 4 threes for a guy that, you know, you mentioned Boston really keyed in on not letting him go early. And I would wonder if that stat you brought up, the first quarter threes, I would wonder if he's the type of guy that there is a correlation to. If he hits 1 or 2 in the first quarter, he'll probably hit 2 or 3 in quarters 2, 3, and 4. And if he goes 0 for 2 or 3 in the first quarter, he might go 0 for 3 or 4 the rest of the game. I wonder if he's one of those guys. But beyond the 3-point shooting, it's also he's a very good slasher. And I have been impressed with him over the last week with his he's knocks down a couple threes, and now the defense is closing out hard on him, and he could put the ball on the floor and get to the cup and finish, or he makes good plays off of that. And I feel like they are at their best. He's almost a bellwether for how they're playing, because they are at their best when you're seeing those plays from not just the three-pointers.
I completely agree. And I actually talked to Frank Vogel about this before the game, about how much better of a player Grayson Allen is than he realized when he got him. He said he couldn't be more impressed with the way that the guy's played all year in all facets of the game. He's leading the league in three-point shooting percentage. Like, that's great. That's a big part of what you brought him in there to do. He said his playmaking off the dribble, his ability to handle the ball against pressure and then make plays, his ability to slash, his ability to, if they're going to, you know, jam him up when he's got a live dribble and they're going to give him driving lanes, he can get to the rim and finish. He competes defensively. He doesn't quit on plays. So, like, dude, he's a very well-rounded player. And he had two assists in this game. I mean, he had a game recently with 14 assists. So I think it's indicative of the really lack of dynamic ball movement that the Suns had at all. That probably would have changed if some of those guys had made some of those threes, because now you're going to force more of a reaction out of the Celtics to like extend and close out harder. That typically promotes another dribble drive and a kick and a swing, and the ball gets hopping. They didn't get into that at all. And really, if you look at this game, this was Kevin Durant. This was Kevin Durant. And look, collectively, the degree of difficulty on his shots made in this game was about as tough as I've seen all year, Adam. And he was 18 for 26 from the field. I mean, it just speaks to his greatness. He had really good defenders draped on him the entire game. And they looked Boston with their core group. They don't do a lot of blitzing. They don't. In fact, I saw an incredible statistic before the game in the game notes. When the starting five, and Porzingis didn't play in this one, when the starting five play together, Adam, they have blitzed ball screens with those five guys on the court five times the entire season. They just don't do it because the versatility and enables them to switch. And they did a lot of that last night because they didn't feel like they were going to give up too much switching Horford on the guys. So they were doing that as well. And I just felt like they couldn't get Phoenix never really got into any situation where they were making the Celtics kind of catch up to the ball. And Grayson Allen is a big part of that, but he just was basically a non-factor in this game offensively. And on a night when you don't have Booker, he's got to be a lot better than that. And I think you are right. If he hits a couple early, what happens is he's more likely to take more shots where maybe the window's tighter because he's already hit a couple. That's any shooter. I was the same way. You come in and hit a couple, and now I'm like, I'm done to let that thing fly. Whereas maybe if you miss your first two, and a guy's in your area on the swing, like you're not as quick to pull the trigger on that. So he kind of got taken out of the game. And as a result, it was Durant and Bradley Beal pretty much fending for themselves. And really that was Durant just single-handedly really keeping him in that game. That really was on the border of being a 20-point game in the third quarter. And Durant's shot making kept it reasonable.
Right. And so you bring up, this is why I think the Grayson Allen piece might be very dependent on Devin Booker, because to me, you can get away with those blitzes against a team that doesn't have Devin Booker. And oh, by the way, you're just going to be putting the ball in Kevin Durant's hands more as a primary initiator, where I think he is probably better as a secondary initiator. Somebody else brings the ball up the court, runs one action, and the ball finds Kevin Durant, and now he's going. So to your point, he had 6 turnovers. As a team, they had 14 turnovers to just 21 assists. And I do think a lot of this has to do with Kevin Durant and some of his limitations. And by the way, 45 points, to your point, 8 of 26 shooting, unbelievable scoring. But again, this is the Kevin Durant MO. If you're guarding a team like them without a Devin Booker, you can beat him with that. In fact, you could beat him in Phoenix comfortably because you limited the passing. And look, this is true of all teams. Assists, if you have high assists, it means you had a lot of shots made. So some of this you have to take with a grain of salt. Phoenix is 14-1 this year with 31 or more assists. And I don't think that is wholly coincidental. That team is at their best when the ball pops, to your point. And they seem to be a team that it's not natural to get that. It's almost natural not to get the ball popping because they have so many good one-on-one players. And every team sometimes has to fight against their nature to bring out the best of themselves. For me, that's the story of the Phoenix Suns. And one I don't know that we have the answer to. Can they consistently find ball movement pace in the half court, because some of this is they walk the ball up, they take their time. There's 8 seconds on the clock now before they get anything going. So can they find the pace in the half court to get the ball popping so that they can get those assist totals up? If the answer is yes, then I think they're a lot more serious of a team. But I don't know. What do you think? Is the answer to that, do you feel confident that it's going to be yes in the playoffs?
You know, this team has been, for me, the most difficult to really give commentary on that you know is valid and you're really confident in like making statements about, because how little those three guys have played together. This isn't like, you know, adding, you know, like a decent player to the mix. Devin Booker and Bradley Beal are top shelf offensive players in this league. So I'm trying to figure it out every night I watch them and they're not all together. How much different is this going to be with Booker? How much different is it going to be when Bradley Beal plays? Like, that's a big deal. So we're trying to make conclusions on it. They, you know, this game, it was just like one of those deals. So you could just feel it. Phoenix, the entire second half, was literally just trying to stay afloat. It was such a struggle to match what Boston can do. And Boston didn't have like a, you know, an epic night for them. They ended up with pretty good numbers because they got some layups and dunks out of their role players that kind of padded those numbers a little bit. 48% overall. But Jason Tatum, you know, he was 11 for 28. And he got some of those in the fourth quarter. He had a really bad shooting night again. And this is three games in a row. Like, he's struggling. He's under 40% over his last three games. He was 11 for 28 in this one. And despite that, it just felt like the Suns were just hanging on, trying to keep it within, you know, from getting to 2025, like I said. And Durant was the main reason for that. But I'm just saying, man, well, how different is this with Devin Booker on the court? My goodness, like the ball, you know, Kevin Durant's not having to take some of the shots he took, or Beal. Like that can be a situation where now, hey, I've done my job, swing it, go ball gets to the other side of the floor, and it's in the hands of a guy like Devin Booker or Bradley Beal. And not only that, oh, here's the other factor. Like, when you only have two of those guys, right? So now there were stretches in the game where there was one out there at a time. Totally different defensive mindset for the Celtics when it's just Beal or just Durant. That's the real luxury of having three of those guys. You never have to go a stretch in the game without at least two of them on the court. They had to play, I don't know how many minutes it was, I'm going to say 8-10 minutes at least, with only one of those guys on the court on a night when no one else was making shots. So it was a much harder for me to determine what this said about Phoenix. And I found some interesting stuff about Boston really as a takeaway from this game, much more so than the Suns.
Well, I agree. Let's move over to the Boston Celtics now. You mentioned Tatum, 29 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. That's a great stat line. You know, only 11 of 28 shooting, though, is rough to your point. And Jaylen Brown, meanwhile, I feel has been on a little bit of a heater of his own. And this is the thing that stood out to me when I was looking at the Celtics, and one of the things I wanted to ask you. Tatum, Brown, and then I'm going to throw in Derek White. I know he's not like the third guy, but I just want to throw him out there. I feel like their usage and their roles on the team have evolved throughout the course of the season. And Derek White in particular, he averaged 20 points per game, 14 games in December. His usage was 22 in December. It was 20 in January. On each side, it's almost like this season has been a bell curve for him, where early in the year, his usage 15, next month, 17.5, then 22, 20, back down to 17, and now down to 12. So in the middle of the season, he was a much bigger part of what they were doing. And over the last 2 months, he has become a much lesser player. And I don't know why that happened. And I don't know if it's a good thing. Now, they've been winning, and Tatum has been going off and doing these different things. But when you talk about playoff success, whenever you see a wild fluctuation in usage, I always say, what's going on with that team? So do you think that's an interesting trend, that he has been so different in terms of how much he's handled the ball and been a central fulcrum?
Very. And it was one of the main things, you know, sitting there courtside, getting ready to watch this game. I'm looking at the Celtics as they come out for that opening tip. And that's the first thing that was on my mind, because the last two games prior to the Phoenix game, I mean, he was basically a complete non-factor in those games. Yep. And I'm just kind of looking at him going, I don't understand, because he was getting so much talk. Whenever you watch the Celtics play in the first 2-3 months of the season, Derek White's name always came up. It felt like he was a significant part of every like run that they made in games that you were talking about the next day, or when you watched highlights, you know, if that's all you caught after the game, Derek White was figuring prominently in those runs. And then I watched a couple games, and I watched every second of both of their previous two games, like I normally will do when I'm getting ready to call a game, kind of really want to watch what they've been doing lately, see to find trends. And man, was he quiet and passive. He came out and he got a couple shots up early in this game where it was clear that he kind of just caught it and went. Like, I'm going to the hole. I'm going to go try to get something up for myself. And I thought it was a pretty good sign. And he ended up with a decent stat line. He had 5 for 8, 10 points, but he had 9 assists. That's more like, hey, if you're not going to get big, you know, 15, 20 point scoring numbers or take 10, 12 shots or whatever, then that's the other thing he can do. He can run an offense. He can come up ball screen. He can move the ball, get it to the right guy. I felt like he did more of that in this game. So that was a good turnaround for him. One of the things I noticed about this game, Adam, and it was interesting because Phoenix had no choice at one point in the fourth quarter. They had to go small. So Durant was the biggest guy in the court. Look, I say small. Durant's, you know, almost 7 feet tall, but he's a perimeter player. So they went with four guards in Durant, a forward, to basically to close the game and trying to get back in it. And Boston came down up like 12, and they took two really quick, like contested threes. And Phoenix scored on both of them. So now here we go. It's like still, man, we can't put this team away. After the second missed three and then Phoenix scored right off of it, immediately Missoula calls timeout. And I'm saying, I'm curious to see how they play out of this because they just basically bailed the Suns out with no paint presence whatsoever on the floor defensively. And they didn't have Eubanks in the game. They didn't have Nurkic. They had nothing back there. And I was going to see, are they going to put their head down and go to the rim now? That's exactly what they did. And five of the next baskets were layups and dunks. And it was just straight up, beat my man, get to the rim. Very little resistance coming from the weak side. And I thought it was a nice adjustment for them because I've said repeatedly their one vulnerability is they bail you out by hunting the three too quickly, too early. Yeah. Despite the fact that they're the best three-point shooting team in the league, I still think there are times they string together too many of them in a row when they've got really dynamic offensive players that can beat you off the dribble. So I do laud them for making the adjustment. And in that moment and basically ending the game with that mentality, like we're going to play this way to our strength with these guys getting to the hole. And that's how they put this team away. And I thought that was a good thing to see for me in that moment, that they made that adjustment because they might need that again down the line in certain situations against certain teams.
And the adjustment is a mentality adjustment. That's what you're saying here. It's less anything. It's more we're focused now on not settling and trying to go to the basket. I think the Celtics, and look, this last week, they have a blowout. They have an 11-game win streak culminate with a blowout over the Warriors that was one of the biggest blowouts in NBA history. And then they lose two in a row to Cleveland, a potential playoff opponent, and then to Denver. So those were high-profile losses, and they bounce back against a shorthanded Suns team. So I look at this and I go, I think the Celtics, it revealed a little bit about who they are because they were on that big run. You don't throw that out. It's important that they won 11 games, and it's important that they won in blowout fashion most of those 11 games. And it's important that they struggled against two teams that can grind you out and win in the fourth quarter in Denver and Cleveland. Those things are important. I liken them to how I felt about the 76ers back in November and December, which is to say that They were really good at the thing they're great at, and they were pressing that advantage. But teams have to find out, how do you win ugly? How do you win when things get tough? And that comes down to identity. I'm not saying the Celtics have an identity crisis because they're obviously very good. But I think that for as good as they are, it's less clear who they are than what you would expect for a team that is far and away the number one seed in the NBA right now. Do you agree with that? And that's part of some of the usage stuff I'm talking about with Derek White and, you know, fluctuating and Drew Holiday and this stuff. Usually a team kind of knows, okay, this is the pecking order. This is how it goes. And this is what we do in these moments. I feel like Boston is still figuring those things out. And some of that is even Jaylen Brown. He's upped his game, it seems, as the season's gone on. And maybe that's the wrench that's been thrown into this.
Yeah, he's right now he's outplaying Tatum. And the thing was interesting in this game, if you didn't see it, so he's 10 for 21 from the field. He missed three shots inside 5 feet that were basically uncontested shots at the start of the game. He was at the rim repeatedly in the first 5 minutes of the game, missed three easy bunnies, missed another one of those in the second half. That's four shots that he really honestly should have converted. It's not even like he was going over Nurkic's outstretched hand. I'm talking about he's at the rim trying to get the ball in the glass or over the front of the rim, and they were rolling out on him. It was really kind of crazy. It was like a lid on the basket at the start for him. Or he has you know, maybe he goes, you know, 13, 14 for 21, and he's up there closer to 35, you know, pushing 40 if he gets those to go. So he had that kind of game. I mean, he just looked so sure of himself. And Tatum coming off of the Denver game and, you know, didn't play well and had that big miss in the corner that could have redeemed his night, and he didn't make that shot against Denver that was so big. And then stats are being put out there. I don't know if you saw this, but they have a ranking of, like, there's 28 guys in the league that have taken 50 shots, I think it is, in crunch time this year. 28 players in the whole league have taken 50 shots in those moments in what we'd consider crunch time. He's 27th out of 28 in field goal percentage in those situations. Yeah. Out of the 28 ranked players that have done it. So he's shooting 32% in those situations. And this is also coming off of, you know, he struggled in the finals. I could tell at the start of the game, like, he was definitely forced, you know, kind of trying to find it and force the issue. But then he strung together misses. And you look up and he was like, I don't know what he was, like 1 for 6 or whatever he was at the start of the game. And you're like, wow, it's another night. Now, he ended up playing much better the last, like, 2.5 quarters, particularly the second half. He just looked more sure of himself. But Jaylen Brown's been playing phenomenally well. And I think, look, if there's one thing that can get in their way in the East, it's, like, themselves at times. Their style of play, how they play. Do they move the ball or rely on great shot making? When they move it and they get to the paint first every trip before anything else happens, then they look so good offensively that you're just not sure how anybody's going to guard this team.
Right. I like this comment that's in the chat here from T. He says, Celtics have so many options, it leads to a little indecision offensively. I think this is accurate. I actually think this is a product of them being so good and having so much talent. And, you know, it reminds me, I've seen, like, these, like, viral videos before. Tim, you might relate to this. Like, if you ask your wife or girlfriend, where do you want to go to eat tonight? It could be a nightmare. Too many choices. You didn't narrow it down. If you say, hey, do you want to go here or here? You give two choices, and then it's like, all right, it's easier to make that decision. I almost feel like that's the Celtics. They need to have the, we're going here or here. And then if not that, this is how we play. This is where you get your points. This is where you score. And they almost have so many guys that you try to fill it out. This is why Tatum the other day said, oh, well, Jaylen had it going, so I went to the corner. It's like, no. We got to have, this is who we are. It doesn't matter who has it going. This is how we play. And sure, we can try to find this guy. And I just think that's the thing that the Celtics, more than anything, this last week has revealed, is that when things are going well, the talent outweighs everything and they look incredible. But when things are not going well, they don't seem to have that sense of, okay, let's go to the foxhole. This is what we do. This is the pecking order. And this is where everybody fits into that equation. I just think this last week revealed that a little bit about them.
I like that. I like that. I will say this. I think there's one guy in their core that doesn't have any issue with hesitation, and it's Porzingis. Porzingis is the one guy that it's almost like he understands if the ball comes to him, they're expecting him to shoot it because it's going to be on a kick out probably when they've run some other action, right? And I'm talking about when he's spotting up. He lets it fly. He doesn't think any other thing. And then if they go to him in other situations where he's the primary recipient, it's because they're running something for him to take advantage of a matchup when he can get into that mid post and shoot a turnaround jumper and stuff he likes to do. Or if he slashes along the baseline for a lob, like, he understands, I'm going to go finish it. I agree with those other four guys. I think it is true. Tatum, Brown, Holiday, White. I think all of those guys at times, because they're also dynamic off the dribble, that they can do certain things that I do think sometimes that is a factor for them. Now, look, last thing I'll say about the Celtics, I saw somebody made a comment about, you know, just basically they live and die with how they make the three. There's some truth in it. I was looking through the game notes again, and I saw something in there that was interesting. So they've had 14 losses on the year. 11 of those losses, they've shot under 35% from the three. It's clear. And that's the first question we asked Frank Vogel before the game. He said, absolutely. It's the number one priority when you play this team. You cannot let them hit you with the floodgate of threes. And we've seen it time and time again this year, the way that they can string them together. They just bury you under an avalanche of 3-point shots. And so that's what it's going to come down to. But look, it's easier said than done when you have that many guys that can shoot the shot at a high percentage. So when they do move it and the quality of shots are better, that's when they have an offense that's literally unstoppable. So it's really, how do they play is probably the single biggest determination on, you know, certainly winning the East. And, you know, playing against a team like Denver in the finals is a different animal. But I'm talking about to win the Eastern Conference, a lot of it is just rest on them. Because I don't think any team has enough scheme or personnel to really be able to get into them and stop them from doing that. It's them. It's their mentality and the way that they approach possession by possession to make themselves easier to guard or have a little bit of hesitation like we talked about. They're their own biggest challenge, I think, in running the table here and getting to the East. They have a huge lead, so we'll see how they manage this the rest of the way.
We will see. It'll be interesting. Let's take a break, though. On the other side, I want to get to quickly hit this Lakers-Minnesota game last night because the Lakers are on a bit of a run right now, and Minnesota's on a little bit of a slide. So we'll talk briefly about those two teams. And then I have some stats for Legs about the post-All-Star NBA that I want to throw at him and get his reaction to. But first, got to tell you about our presenting sponsor. The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. March Madness is the second best, for me personally, the second best event to bet on behind the Super Bowl. Only the Super Bowl is better, but March Madness, of course, that first weekend, 4 days straight, sunrise to sunset, nothing but hoops. So if you haven't been in on sports gambling and you're curious, that's an excellent time to get in on it. I know that we are going to be at DNVR in Las Vegas for the Sweet 16, doing a bunch of bets and different things there. So if you're interested in following along with us, check out the DNVR YouTube page. But download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code ALLNBA. New customers can bet $5 and get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code ALLNBA. The crown
gambling
is...
problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
So glad to have that disclosure now done for me. It's phenomenal. Also want to tell you guys about Manscaped. They've got a brand new lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, a new generation of their famous blade here. The trimmer comes with two interchangeable next generation skin safe blade heads, one for a classic trim and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. And it's got that dual LED spotlight to navigate your shamrock patch. This is a St. Paddy's Day read. So they put a bunch of St. Paddy's puns in this read here. Worried you'll make a mess? Fear not. It's waterproof. You can do it in the shower, shave with the Misty Wars under a waterfall, or even during a rain dance. I swear to God, it says that in here. Get 20% off and free shipping with code ALLNBA at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code ALLNBA at Manscaped. This St. Patrick's Day, make your little hairy leprechaun even luckier with Manscaped. Back here with Tim Legler, ALLNBA show. Let's move on now, Legs, to the Wolves and the Lakers. The Wolves fall to the Lakers, who have been running, and the Wolves find themselves now just a few games after this Karl-Anthony Towns injury news. They find themselves in the third seed, all the way down in the three seed after holding the one seed for 3 months in the Western Conference, fumbling it a little bit here at the end, as we predicted would happen last week. What stood out to you when you watched this game?
I thought that the Lakers take fewer threes than any team in the league. They ranked dead last in attempts, and they were like bottom five, and they just been gradually dropping because their numbers have been so low every night. And now they're actually officially last in the league in 3-point attempts. So it's interesting. They're at their best when they play a different style than what the rest of the league looks like. It's really interesting. And I thought that was a huge factor in this game, because not only did you not have Karl-Anthony Towns, and I didn't know Rudy Gobert wasn't going to play till I sat down to watch the game, and I was excited to watch it because this was the game I was going to be talking about on TV after. And then you look, and there's Rudy Gobert's with street clothes. Like, oh, right. Man, I didn't see that coming. I didn't know that. And Naz Reid can really play, and he's been really good offensively for them. It's not the same presence in terms of their size. It's what separates the Timberwolves defensively. It differentiates them from other teams. So I thought in this game, the Lakers were even more intent to play to their strengths. They only took 24 threes. That's a number that was more like during my era in the 90s. That's what teams were taking. 10 for 24, so they shot a decent percentage, and they only took 24. They had 86 points in the paint or at the foul line, 86. Crazy. And so it was. And LeBron had a stretch where they got separation in this game in the third quarter, where he just put his head down three consecutive times and three straight trips, and they doubled the lead, and that was pretty much it. They kind of held on the rest of the night. Look, Anthony Davis is sensational. We'll get into that. But just first impression was Lakers really played to their strength, and they made sure that they were intent on taking advantage of the fact that Minnesota was not going to be nearly as big in the paint as they normally are. And LeBron and AD just imposed their, you know, their physical dominance on this game.
I mean, this was a weird one to gauge the specific thing you're talking about, because Naj Reid is a great player, but he's not necessarily a great paint protector. In fact, he's pretty bad at that. He's a great offensive player. So you take out Gobert, you take out Towns, and now you're playing what was a strength for you defensively. Protecting the rim is now a weakness, and they took advantage of that. Luka Garza played, you know, 10 minutes. He's not a guy that's in the rotation very often. They have TJ Warren playing for them right now, who I want to get to here in a moment. But to your point, the Lakers did what they were supposed to do, given that, which is dominate the paint. And the guy who did it the most was Anthony Davis. 27 points, 25 rebounds. 25 rebounds is insane. 10 offensive rebounds. That shows you how weak the Timberwolves were in the paint. 5 assists, 7 steals, and then 3 blocks. He nearly had the 5x5. So he has been incredible. And if you look at the post All-Star numbers for both him and LeBron, LeBron in particular, the post All-Star numbers are very impressive for them. What do you think? Is this a sign of just getting a weak team, or is this a sign of maybe those guys are starting to ramp up themselves?
You know, the Lakers are clearly this one topic that like just doesn't go away, right? So in our line of work, it's just nonstop. For an average team, which they've been most of the year, you know, you're talking about a 500 team, like they get obviously more discussion than any team will ever get that's a 500 team. I will say this, and so you don't want to react night by night with the Lakers. You can't, because you'll lose your mind. You'll sound like you don't know what you're talking about if you go night by night with this team, because that's kind of how they look. I'll say that, having said that, they're definitely playing more consistently lately. And I thought last night, despite the fact that they didn't have Towns and Gobert, and I know that's a big difference, but you can also tell just how clean a team is playing, regardless of who's on the court for the other team. I thought the Lakers just looked really sharp last night. Everything they did just felt like it had a real purpose to it. And so I was impressed with the way they played. And real quick on Anthony Davis' stat line, I don't know if you saw this, but that's the first player in history. When I say in history, you got to remember now, they didn't keep block shot statistics right back in the day, because something tells me some of those guys like Will Russell would have had some lights like this. But he's the first player since they started tracking blocks ever to have 25 points, 25 boards, 5 assists, and 5 steals.
Crazy.
So that's the kind of night that he had. And believe me, you felt all of it watching the game. It wasn't like, wow, I looked at the stat sheet afterwards, like, I can't believe, wow, he had that kind of line. No, you knew it. He was like, wow. Like, did he get 30 rebounds? Because he was just so energized. And you know what else he did defensively for them? What he allows them to do is to play single covered sometimes when he jumps out, and they don't help because he tracks guys all the way to the basket, and he makes plays late, whether it's an alter or a block, so that you can stay closer to the three-point shooters and not overcommit when Anthony Davis is guarding one of those guys that's driving on him. And so his presence was just the largest on the court, even larger than LeBron's. And it was Anthony Davis's show. And typically when he plays like that, Lakers look really good.
Yeah. I want to go to the other side, though. I almost find the Minnesota Timberwolves more interesting because, you know, you're trying to figure out who you are. No Gobert in this one, so it throws an even bigger wrench into the system here.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But I have a couple notes on Anthony Edwards. One, so now that he is shouldering way more of the scoring responsibility, and I think he has been more decisive, as Chris Finch put it, but also more aggressive. I mean, part of being more decisive is, okay, I got to find my shot. You really see where he's strong and where he's weak right now in his development. He is really good at navigating tight spaces, getting open in tough ways, getting to the cup, finding his shot, that one-on-one scoring. What he's not good at, and again, he's fighting uphill really big in a game like this, he's not necessarily good at manipulating the defense. And I thought you saw a lot of that in this game where it's almost like head down, I'm just putting combo moves together, like a player playing 2K who doesn't know how to play, just hitting all the buttons, just trying to find something, just move after move, combo move after combo move. Instead of slowing down and saying, okay, where's the low man? Where's the help? How do I manipulate this? How do I set this up so that when I start making my move, it's more... You know, I don't need an 8-part combo. I just need the two moves, get to the rim now. And I feel like it's really on display now. Again, not great spacing, not a lot of other dynamic players around him. But to me, you really notice how little he seems to be setting things up and how much he's just going.
I completely agree with it. And it's the nuance that I've been looking for out of him. And look, he'll get there. I think he'll get there. Right now, he's just, when you are that explosive athletically, when you get off the floor like that, on your jump shot so that you know literally you can get one off whenever you want, you're just so relying on those things rather than the counters and the reads and using multiple moves with a purpose that leads to something really good for you or somebody else. That's where he's still trailing some of the top guys in this league. Think he'll get there. He's a spectacular talent, but I agree with you. And he had two plays last night in the second half that I was literally wrote down because I was thinking about maybe if they had won the game, I was going to talk about them because they were two plays exactly what we're talking about, that it showed me growth. They were both mid-range shots. One was an 8-footer lean back in the lane, but he had used multiple dribble moves to get to that spot on the floor. And then he didn't just try to jump through guys at the rim. He leaned back away from the defense with a soft, sort of difficult over the front of the rim shot. And then it was like the next possession or shortly after, he gets a play on transition where they outlet him the ball and he's going at a backtracking defense and he didn't, and they were literally clearly backing up to the extent they weren't going to get dunked on. I think it was Austin Reeves. So you're thinking, well, he's going to stop at some point and shoot the ball or he's going to try to plow through somebody at the rim and try to finish. And he got to about the foul line area and he shot a pull up 15 footer in transition because that's what the defense gave him. And it was the smart shot and he drained both of those. And so you're not going to see it maybe all come together right now all of a sudden, but as long as you're seeing little bits and pieces of what we're talking about, to see a more mature scorer, that's what we're talking about, right? And controlling the game a little bit differently than just being a series of like just athletic plays that we're talking about the next day. He's getting there, but he hasn't put all that together yet. But I think that's a fair observation on your part.
Nikhil Alexander-Walker, a guy I'm just endlessly fascinated by because his skill set is so unique and so interesting. He goes 3 of 4 from three in this game, and his one miss legs, if you remember it, he missed it was an air ball that he missed by about 8 feet. This is the guy, he's that type of shooter. 3 of 4, that's a great night. The one he missed, though, make think, like, how on earth does this guy ever make him? And I think that's a little bit of who he is. But the other guy I wanted to talk to you about was TJ Warren. So he just joins the team. He's played 3 games. I'm a huge TJ Warren fan. Like as a player, he's obviously been on the shelf for a while with some injuries and different things. He's only played 3 games, but I'm intrigued by what he gives them. First of all, they're shorthanded. He's going to play without Karl Anthony Towns there and, you know, gives them a more of a stretch four type option there. But I'm also interested if there's something more than that from him. He's been too few games to really know just how healthy he is. But last night, I just noticed he's in the positive despite being on the court when the Lakers made that 11-2 run to start the fourth. He still wound up in the positive. He's kind of like Kyle Anderson, but opposite. He's the offensive Kyle Anderson in some way, where he gives you this extra spacing and playmaking and an extra guy at that power forward spot. What do you make of TJ Buckets? And what do you think about what role he can play on this team down the stretch without Karl-Anthony Towns?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was watching the Indiana game when he checked in, and you know, I was kind of like, "Who's that?" Like, you know, because you haven't seen him all year. About him. Yeah, and there he was. He comes in the game, and I'm like, "Oh wow, TJ Warren." Because you know, look, he's 30 years old. It's not like he's 37, 38 years old. He's only 30, and he has been a guy that has proven he can flat out score, and he will score in limited minutes. That's a great thing about TJ Warren. Like, you know, he's not one of those guys that's got to be out there and run around for 5 minutes to find his rhythm, or a guy that you got to come down and you're gonna ISO him four times in a row because that's his game. It's not like that. He just has a nose for getting open. He can shoot threes. He's got a good mid-range game. He can post up some. He's just a good scorer. And I think it's a nice little pickup. They kind of do those under the radar type deals where, you know, you get a guy now joining your rotation. And right now he's getting a little bit of a tryout, probably a trial period. And look, he's played three games. So he's played, you know, 50 minutes in three games, Adam, but he's shot 53% in those three games. Like, you haven't played all year. And then you come in and, you know, limited shot numbers. I get it. But still, it's not easy to do when you sat all year. You come out there for the first time. And you're playing for, by the way, a team that's like trying to win the Western Conference. Like, it's not like you're just playing garbage minutes on a bad team. No, you're coming in there and they're counting on you to do your thing. I agree with you. I think it's a nice pickup. It's something I'm going to be monitoring and watching, because that is another guy that in a playoff game can give you, like, you know, a 10-point quarter. Like, when you have to have it, just to keep you in a game, because he's like that talented of a scorer. And on a night when Edwards is really struggling, or, you know, Jane McDaniels can't throw it in the ocean on a given night, and you got this guy that you could play 15, 20 minutes, and he'll go get you double figures. So I think it's a nice pickup for Minnesota. It's a nice addition to their rotation if he can stick.
And it's something they need. Obviously, scoring is the question mark we have about the Timberwolves. Can they score enough? We know they can get stops. And if you look at, okay, they have a great starting five. We know who that is. And then you have Naz Reid, Nikhil Alexander-Walker off the bench. Those guys are shoe-ins to be playoff players, and I think Kyle Anderson, shoe-in. You probably only need eight guys, especially the deeper you go. But early on in the rounds, you probably need a ninth guy. I look around and I go, I don't know who it is. Maybe Monte Morris, you know, they've had some options there. But TJ Warren to me might be the guy that's just as good as any, if not better, of an option for them, especially given their biggest need, which could be that bench scoring. To your point, you need a guy to play 11 minutes, but in those 11 minutes, he needs to produce points. He's probably the best bet there, so I'm intrigued by him. Unfortunately, the Timberwolves just hit the injury bug at the worst time, the toughest part of their schedule, and psychologically, I'm curious to see what happens if they fall in the standings the way they appear to be.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, I want to get this to you, though, because I want to ask you about All-Star break trends. And first of all, there's a big talking point. I brought it up briefly, I think, a week or 2 weeks ago. The NBA, and I credit Tom Haberstroh for finding this. Ethan Strauss wrote about it on his Substack. The NBA has really had noticeable, measurable shifts in scoring since about mid to late January, and we saw those 70-point outbursts. Foul rates are down about 3%. Per 100 possessions, there's about three fewer free throw attempts per 100 possessions across the league. That's not one team, that's everybody. It seems that they're allowing more contact. You just mentioned the Boston Phoenix game. It stood out to you how much contact they were allowing there. Scoring is down. Free throw attempts are down. I think it's clear that Adam Silver and the people that make these decisions got together after everybody was scoring 70 points and said, our game's a little out of control. Let's tighten it up. First of all, everybody in the NBA seems to agree that this happened. I find it a little, this is what Ethan wrote about. It's a little strange that the NBA can make a rule change in secret and without telling anyone, without, you know, let's talk about this, that has a measurable impact on the game. It's a little concerning to me almost to say that the league has that much influence. Are you okay with it? Because in my opinion, it's producing a better game. I thought scoring was a little too ridiculous. The games now look like real basketball. And do you think that there's weird implications to, hey, if the NBA is telling referees, let's not call this, let's not call that. Are you uncomfortable with that implication?
I'm not at all. I think, look, bottom line is you're just always trying to improve the product. And I, for me, a lot of what we were watching had become monotonous. It felt monotonous to me. It was just too easy. It was too, each possession by each team that was playing every night just kind of looked the same. And when I was sitting there calling the game on Saturday, I did notice how handsy defenders were on the ball. And right. What Tatum and Brown and Durant in particular, Bradley Beal, what those star players were playing through in terms of contact. And I felt like before that was a whistle. And because teams were getting into the bonus later in quarters lately. I've been noticing that. Like fouls are being, the whistle's blowing, right? It's like 6 minutes into a quarter. And typically you're just used to those guys going to the free throw line because they're in the bonus by 6 minute mark usually. And lately I've been seeing fouls called, you know, with 3.5 minutes left in the quarter and they're just taking the ball side out. And like, wow, okay, so that is a difference. So, and it's subtle. Look, you mentioned the free throw numbers. That doesn't sound like any big deal. The way you described it, okay, what's the big, that's only a few points a game. It's not that. Think about it. If they're not calling as many of those fouls on fouls, then how much more are they letting go on the perimeter where those aren't even leading to shots or they're leading to more difficult contested shots like mid-range that, because a guy couldn't get to the rim because there's more contact being allowed on his dribble. So I am for it. Whatever it takes to make the product better. And look, some of this stuff was going to automatically correct itself as you got into the playoffs. But I think it's kind of going to get guys a little bit more used to what that whistle might look like once you get there. Because I agree, some of the free throw totals in individual games for teams have been very low lately. And I don't know, you know, we don't know. The league certainly isn't going to come out and say they mandated this. So what conversation took place or where it came from. But I think it has been noticeable and the data seems to back it up.
I think he is, Adam Silver, for the first time in his tenure, is channeling his inner David Stern. This is a total David Stern move. You know what? We don't need to tell anybody. Let's go behind the curtain and say our game needs a help. Let's nudge it in this direction. And I think it's probably a good thing here. But let's get to some numbers then about that. So since the All-Star break, the Denver Nuggets have the best record in the NBA. They are 8-1, second in offense, sixth in defense. I'm just going to start with, and by the way, one of the toughest parts of their schedule over that stretch where they were playing a lot of big teams, I think they focused in. But I would say if the NBA is going to more of a playoff whistle early and they're just getting this in the regular season, I think Denver benefits from this more than any other team. And the reason is, one, they don't shoot a lot of free throws to begin with. They don't have guys that just draw fouls and get to the foul line. They play a bruising style. And two, defensively, Denver's strength is not athleticism and speed, especially on the perimeter. Their strength is literal strength and size. So if you're allowed more contact, I think it helps them defensively. And then on the other end, they're used to not drawing fouls anyway. They go away from fouls as a scorer. So I look at that and I go, Denver, I think, zeroed in post All-Star break. I think they upped their intensity of different things. But I also think they benefit from a tougher whistle naturally. And maybe there's a little bit of that at play as well.
No, that's a good point. And particularly when it comes to Jokic, you know, and this is why when I was watching the game between Boston and Denver, that rematch, just the more you watch Denver play and Jokic play, kind of realize like he's the one guy, and maybe you'd put Luka in this class if there's another guy. And LeBron certainly, you know, not as often as he used to, but still I'd probably in this statement, not fazed or affected by anything you come up with defensively. They're not impacted at all. They're not limited in any way, whether it's scheme or personnel you throw at them or pressure the situation, whatever it may be. And Jokic is the number one guy with regard to that. He catches it where he wants. He controls it where he wants. It does. And you can run blitzes at him if you want to. Go ahead. You can double him and he's so big and he's so smart about what he's looking at. He'll pick you apart, and teams are reluctant to double him as much as you should. But it's that physical strength and his ability to play through whatever they're allowing. And it's going to be the same effectiveness. Now, he's going to finish the game with those giant bear scratches on his arms that he, seems to always end up with. Yeah. But it doesn't limit him. It's not like you're ever going to watch a game and go, man, they're really letting those guys play against Jokic and it's bothering him. It doesn't bother him. And so I think that's the point you're making. And Aaron Gordon's kind of like that too. Like, they can play through that stuff and still do what they have to do and get the ball where they have to offensively.
So the Nuggets are 8-1. Here are the other three teams with just two losses. You have Boston Celtics at 6-2, the Milwaukee Bucks at 7-2, the Oklahoma City Thunder at 8-2. I find it not so coincidental, Legs, that those are probably the four best teams in the NBA right now. I mean, Minnesota was, they get injuries. Let's put them to the side. Boston, Milwaukee, Denver, Oklahoma City. And after the All-Star break, what's the level of focus? You got a little rest. It's the home stretch. I find it unsurprising that the four best teams in the league have come out the four best teams post All-Star break. I feel like it's meaningful that those are the four teams at the top. What do you think?
No, I agree with that. I think that, that's always, it's so late into the season. It's not the midway point. The All-Star game comes much later, and it's a lot of time to hit the reset button and get your mind on where it needs to be coming out of that and start turning it up. Now, for Milwaukee, they were in a different situation altogether. They absolutely had to have it because of what was going on with them going into the break. Like, that was like, okay, everybody was waiting to see what's it going to be. And now they're starting to get the ship righted. And it looks like more and more with all the issues that the Knicks are having, is it going to be the collision course we expected to take place between Milwaukee and Boston? It's looking more like that. And I think for Oklahoma City, they're a team, because they're so young and they're going through this at this level for the first time, it's important to maintain it. Now, I don't know if they'll end up necessarily the number one seed or not. Denver's a game back. We'll see. But they're not the type of team that can treat any of this stuff nonchalantly, because of this is the first time going through it. So you need to test yourself every night when these games become more meaningful and there's more pressure and it's more physical, and they've been able to do that. By the way, there's three teams in the league that have not lost more than two games in a row all year. Do you know who those three teams are?
So it was Boston until Boston lost to Denver. So that's the only team I know it's not because of that one. But I don't know. Celtics, let me hear them.
Celtics have not lost three in a row. That was only, lost two. That was,
You said three in a row. Okay.
More than two in a row.
So I would guess Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City, Boston, and Minnesota. And, they might be they play the Clippers next in their shorthanded. Yeah. So that might be, they might come to an end. But I think that speaks to the consistency with which Oklahoma has played. They haven't fallen prey to a rut, and that's what good teams do, man. And that's what I think Boston did against Phoenix. Like, they, regardless, they saw Phoenix, they're shorthanded, they figured they're going to win the game anyway. They came out and they played really hard, and it was important. I mean, they admitted it was important to reverse the momentum, no matter how big a lead they have in the Eastern Conference. And even for best record overall, they're going to have home court advantage through the finals, and they know that. And yet they didn't want this to go on any further. And so they came out very intent. That's what good teams do, and that's what Oklahoma City has done.
That's really interesting. I want to go – the other team that deserves a mention here when we're talking about record post-All-Star break is the New Orleans Pelicans, who are 6-3. But what stands out to me is they have the number one defense post-All-Star break. Now, we're only talking about nine games. Again, small sample size can throw you here. But – them winning with defense, and then them winning with Trey Murphy, by the way, who's shooting 41% on 11 threes post-All-Star break. I don't know what to make of them, because they're the team that is just perpetually hot and cold. The moment, if we say nice things about them today, they're probably going to go on a three-game losing streak. But it is noteworthy that they're 7-3 in their last 10 games here coming out of the All-Star break. What do you have any thoughts on them? They, by the way, two-game cushion in the five seed now, ahead of the six-seeded Phoenix Suns, which is, two games is a lot considering how tight it's been all year.
I agree. They're playing great. They're probably getting less talk for any team that's kind of in the mix than any of these teams. We even talk more about the Eastern Conference teams like Miami and Cleveland and New York. We talk about those teams more than the Pelicans. And yet there they are. And they're 13-4 in their last 17. Now, look, if you go down and look at the list of games that they've won, like who they're playing, not very impressive list. But the numbers they're putting up defensively are impressive. And in this league, holding teams down to under 100 or right around 100 is not an easy thing to do, despite what you watched yesterday between the Knicks and the Sixers. Okay, to set basketball back 40 years. despite that game and watching that, it's not easy.
Was it the Knicks and the Thunder or Knicks and Sixers?
Yeah. I don't care who you're playing. Like, these teams can score. Everybody's got shot makers. They shoot a lot of threes. So I focus more on, like, how New Orleans is winning. It's very, very, very much workmanlike. There's teams in front of them they're supposed to beat, and they're beating all of them. And they're 13-4 in their last 17. So I got a feeling here, this stretch, you know, by the time you get to the end of March, when they've got games against Cleveland, the Clippers, Miami, Milwaukee, Oklahoma City, Boston, Phoenix, they've got all those teams coming up the rest of March, then we're going to have a much better idea. First of all, if they like, you know, go 5-2, 6-1 in the games I just mentioned, now everybody's going to be talking about the Pelicans. They're probably going to be third place. You know what I mean? So this is going to tell us more, I think. It's been impressive what they're doing now. They're playing a really good quality basketball, but the opponent level hasn't been the greatest. So now that's the next step. We're going to figure that out here over the next few weeks.
So here's the middle group of teams that we expected to make a push or needed to make a push and who have not. Because, by the way, after those six teams I just mentioned with the Pelicans being 6-3, almost everybody else in the NBA is 500. And then you have a little group at the bottom here. But Suns are 4-5 out of the break. Mavs are 4-5. By the way, with the worst defensive rating by far, by 4 points per 100 possessions worse than the Washington Wizards post All-Star break right now. Their defenses have been atrocious. The Wolves are 5-5. That's injuries. Clippers are 5-5. The Heat are 5-4, and the Pacers are 5-4. All of those are teams that we looked at and said, it's time to make a move. It's time to let's see where they jockey for position. And all of those teams have basically just stuck into the middle. So of those teams I just mentioned, Suns, Mavs, Wolves, Clippers, Heat, Pacers, which one to you is the most sort of shocking that they have come out so flat?
Oh, man. Well, Suns, because they're still dealing with injuries, so I probably would take them out of the mix. Wolves, the Clippers. The Clippers have been banged up too. So that's part of the problem, is like some of these teams are banged up. Yeah. Minnesota's missing a key guy. Clippers are missing key guys. Phoenix is missing key guys. Dallas, for me, you know how I felt about Dallas when they made the moves, and then I called them out because they're just, you know, you watch them every night. You're like, my goodness, like they just don't play hard enough. They don't care enough on the defensive end of the floor, because I think they're just going to control you with this great offense. They won their last two games. I just think we're going to be talking about this team with some ups and downs all the way the rest of the year. And then they're going to get into the playoffs, and we'll see, because that's when you really find out the greatness of Luka Doncic. And it's, when it's slower, slows down, possession by possession is much more important. And they've got the best player on the floor every night. And in terms of controlling the action, unless they play Denver. So that probably be the most surprising to me, because I thought they'd gotten some stuff figured out, and then they just went into this tailspin.
123.1 defensive rating is hard to do. To your point, that's hard to do. Giving up more than 123 points per 100 possessions. Especially, we just talked about scoring is down. They're the one team inflating scoring numbers for the opposition because they're allowing so much right now. So clearly they have to. And here's what's interesting, Legs. Luka, post All-Star break, is averaging 37.5 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists. He's almost averaging a 40-point triple-double, yet here they are in this defensive rut. And maybe those things are connected. I haven't watched them. Again, I catch maybe every fifth game of the Dallas Mavericks, so I can't say that I watch them consistently enough every night. But when you just look at the numbers on that, you think the problem is not can you get all these points. The problem is there a defensive buy-in? And I just wonder if Luka is the guy that has to change his approach and set a defensive tone. I know he's not their best defensive player, but sometimes your best overall player just has to set a tone about what's important. And maybe that's the move that has to happen for Dallas.
I've said that about him from day one. At some point, the seriousness has to kick in. He's never going to be a guy that's going to be great at guarding, you know, big time wings on the perimeter that have a live dribble, because his feet laterally first step defensively aren't great. And you can't use your strength as much as you used to on the perimeter. There are other ways that he can be really good defensively in the post and as a help defender and just communicating. And actually probably the number one thing is sprinting back in transition, like with a dead sprint to get back and get into the mix. You know, he has a number of possessions a game where that's just not a priority for him. So you know, I'll continue to point it out until I see dramatic change. It's been better this year for the most part. Now, I don't know what's going on lately specifically with him. I haven't watched him on film to see it, but I have noticed this year there were games I watched and definitely I saw more of a concerted effort, at least to look average defensively. But that's always going to be the biggest challenge for him.
Yeah. The last guy I want to mention here, post All-Star, I mentioned it briefly earlier, but I'm going to bring it back up. Bron, since the All-Star break, 28.5 points per game, 60% from the field, 47.5% from three. That's 60, 50 splits right now. And he's taken five a game. It's not like he's not shooting the three ball. He's shooting the three ball at a pretty high rate. LeBron is the guy to me that most you expect to coast through the regular season, especially the middle part, and then start to ramp it up. He's the one guy we know when he puts, you know, it into sixth gear, he has another a whole nother level to him. And when I see 48% from three, 60% from the field, I look at that and I go, okay, I'm keeping an eye. I don't really have a take on it other than to say I'm keeping my eye on LeBron right now because he's the one guy that can maybe save that team.
It's interesting, you know, his numbers because you mentioned his three-point percentage. It's the first time in his career. Well, actually, 2012-13, he was over 40%.
He barely shot him that year, though. That was the point.
Significantly fewer, right? He was taking three a game. He's taken 5.5 a game. So 40.7 is the highest three-point percentage of his career for a season. And at the same exact time, he's shooting fewer free throws per game than he ever has. So is there a correlation? Is that because he's comfortable with the jumper? He doesn't go to the line as much. He has complained that he doesn't get the respect that he feels like he deserves on drives. They actually shot a lot of free throws last night, more than the Wolves. But no, there's no other way to put it, man. The guy's playing incredible offensive basketball. He really is. Yeah. Like he just seems to make the right decision every single time right now, when to drive, when to finish, when to pull up, when to shoot the three, when to facilitate. He's reading the game beautifully right now. And that's why, you know, he reminds you, man. He reminds you why you just cannot just completely dismiss him no matter what their year looks like because of him and how good he still looks. And it defies logic that he's this good, you know, at 39 years old, still putting up these kind of numbers.
That does it for our show today. Some interesting trends post All-Star break, you know, to kind of keep an eye on. Tonight, let me take a look at the schedule. I don't remember what we had tonight game-wise that we'll be talking tomorrow. Hornets Pistons. I know you want to dive into that one, Legs.
Can't wait. Cannot wait, man.
Suns Cavs will probably be the marquee game tonight. You do have Wemby hosting the Warriors, which is always interesting. Nuggets Raptors, Jamal playing his old hometown team, Celtics Blazers. So not the best slate, but you know one or two of those games is going to end up being really interesting. Legs, it's good to have you back. You're off tomorrow though.
I am off tomorrow. I got a travel day tomorrow, but I'll be back with you on Thursday
and Friday. Everybody, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Don't forget to hit that like button on the way out and we'll see you tomorrow. The mayor.